Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is When Orla Met, a conversation with and about some of the leading athletes, engaging brains, and fascinating characters in sport. In part one of When Orla Met Jonathan Vauters, I spoke to the veteran of the world of cycling about what sport means to society, whether we can ever hope for clean sport, and whether that really even matters. Vauters shared his theory on the Darwinian need for us to be able to see who is the best in any given discipline untainted by cheating. And that's where we pick up for part two of When Orla Met Jonathan Vauters. Isn't that the problem, though? There is money in winning. There's not money in catching dopers. And everything really in the world comes back to that, doesn't it? Money?
Well, of course. But that's what I'm saying is that, the teams, the athletes, everyone should be throwing money into anti-doping. I mean, every single top rider you talk to says, I just want an even playing field. I want to know that my competition is clean. You know, I'm clean. I want to know my competition is clean. Okay, perfect. Then we all have to contribute to that. And I'm sure that that's probably annoying to riders that are clean, saying, wait, hold on a second. Like, I'm perfectly clean. Why is money being taken out of my salary to pay for catching these, you know, cheaters? Well, this is just where we are. So that money that you're talking about, that temptation, yes, it's all there. And I think a large percent of that should be used to make the anti-doping efforts more robust. I mean, WADA and CADF and whatever are always complaining about the fact that, well, you know, we would do this, but we didn't have the funding and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then we look at these teams in cycling that have, you know, these massive, whatever, 25 million plus pound budgets. And you think, well, then why don't we solve this problem, or at least do a much better job of solving this problem as opposed to complaining about it?
I think it's probably fair to say that most of us born as kids, if we get into sport, don't ever think that we're going to be cheats. We never want to be cheats.
No.
And yet we see that a cheating culture can take over quite easily. From your own experience of coming into cycling, maybe as a wide-eyed kid, and then to taking your first EPO injection, how difficult a transition is that, or how easy is it to cross that line and to contribute towards a culture of cheating?
Well, it's not easy, but at the same point in time, it sort of manifests itself over time. You know, that crossing over the line, it's not something that occurs overnight. It's something that, I mean, gosh, you know, even the most hardened quote unquote cheaters like Lance Armstrong, I mean, I watched him go through that process, and that when he first went to Europe and was racing professional, you know, he was getting beaten a lot, and he became aware of the cheating, right? And he said, this is bullshit. These guys are cheaters. I'm against cheating. You know, his very strong Texan bravado, basically, like, okay, anyway. So, you know, and then slowly but surely it just grinds, and it's basically athletes in that position are waiting for a solution from the authorities, because their career is only going to be, you know, 5, 10, maybe a little bit longer than 10 years. So they wait 1 year and then 2 years. I mean, I remember this process with myself. I turned pro in 94, was absolutely clean in 94. And I thought, okay, well, and I'd been made very aware that many of the other people were doping around me. And I thought, yeah, okay, but this won't last forever. The authorities will figure this out. You know, they'll start a new test for EPO or whatever else. And then you go through 1995 and there's no change. And then 1996 and there's no change. And eventually you just become worn down by always being second fiddle. You become worn down by always being an also-ran. You become worn down by reading in the media, we thought this guy was going to be really good, but apparently he's a bit of a disappointment. You know, I mean, that kind of thing really stings. When you hear that from family, friends, from the media, you know that he was supposed to be one of the, you know, great climbing talents in the world, and apparently he's just not, and oh well, guess we'll have to wait for somebody else. And you're sitting there thinking, well, I know exactly why I'm not one of the great climbing talents of the world, and I could fix that. And then you start to get angry. And you start to get angry at the people that are doping. You start to get angry at the media. You start to get angry at the fans. You start to get angry at your family. You start to get angry at everyone who's criticizing you for not performing as you were meant to. And that anger quickly drives you away from sort of a, you know, I'm waiting for the authorities to come up with a solution, to I'm going to take this into my own hands and I'm going to do what I need to do to get this done because I'm tired of being criticized. And then off we go. And then, you know, step by step, it's something small. And then eventually, I would say the mentality for me went from I'm an athlete to I'm a warrior. And when it's almost like I'm a warrior, you know, all is fair in love and war. It doesn't matter. I'm just out there to get a job done. Like, I'm just out there to make sure my sponsor is happy, to perform as my sponsor is expecting me to. I'm out there to pay my mortgage, to support my family. I don't care. I'm just getting it done the way I need to get done. And I can tell you the reverse of that, when you sort of at one moment where you, and for me, it was on top of the Mont Ventoux when I set the record up the Mont Ventoux and won that stage. And I remember thinking, just all of a sudden it just hit me, like, this is just, what have I done? Like, I've basically just completely let my anger and hubris and whatever just completely take myself over. And I stopped being an athlete and I just started being a killer and sort of almost like dehumanizing my competition and not really caring about them and not caring about fairness and not caring about the sanctity of the sport. And I can still remember sitting on top of the podium going, this is a joke. Here I am in the yellow jersey of the Dauphiné Libre, having set the record of the most famous mountain in France, and this is a joke. And sort of from that moment forward, I can't ever say that I really cared as much, and slowly had to let my mentality unwind back to, you know, being a bike rider and being somebody who liked cycling and not somebody who, you know, was whatever, you know, driving a battleship.
I mean, was the sport, and we would say no because it didn't, but was that sustainable? Could it have continued the way that it did if there weren't all these exposés, given that if everybody was at it, essentially?
I don't know the answer to that, but why would you have wanted it to? And this is what, whenever I read somebody saying, and, you know, starting with, you know, Floyd Landis, whenever I read a quote saying, this is horrible for cycling, it's just a bunch of crap, you know? Like, the scandals are actually wonderful for cycling. Don't get me wrong, from a financial standpoint, it's very difficult. Having to go out and sell a multi-million dollar sponsorship in a world where obviously there's a huge amount of criticism and negative press, that's not easy. And, you know, in that respect, okay, it's quote unquote bad for the sport. But those scandals are the catalyst for cleaning up the sport. If those scandals don't happen, I mean, you never get to see riders who had the moral compass to remain clean no matter what perform well. You never get to see that. And so I don't know whether the sport could have continued that way or not. I don't really care. But it would have been horrible if it did. We would have missed seeing so many great talents come through in sort of a new clean environment had those scandals not happened. I mean, for me, and I know a lot of people disagree with me, but Operation Parto was good for cycling. Floyd Landis Positive was good for cycling. You know, all the crap I talked about in 2008 was good. Like, all of that, those scandals are what, it's like, it's this pushing force behind the sport to keep it on the up and up, to keep the competition fair. Now, that said, I think the last couple of years, you know, maybe we need to let off the gas a little bit and just simply, like, there should still be the force and the push to make sure it's fair, but it's almost like we're looking for scandal and not fairness. And that, is a little bothersome. Like, I think now we need to say, okay, we want fair sport, but we don't want scandal as entertainment. And what I've viewed the last couple of years is that cycling fans are almost viewing the scandals as the entertainment. Mm. And that is not great.
And is there a danger that cycling fans, having been burned in the past, are almost jumping ahead of the game so that they're not burned again, so that they are seeing doping everywhere, or they're seeing doping where athletes have been cleared, just in case in the end their hearts are broken again?
Totally. I mean, it's the classic, you know, whatever, boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife, that the one breaks up with the other one because they think that, you know, that my heart might get broken one day, so I'm going to get out of this relationship before that ever happens. And I think that happens a lot in cycling, that people, they don't want to become invested, and they basically almost dismiss the rider that they are emotionally invested in, or jump the gun and basically proclaim them guilty before the verdict has really been reached, because they don't want to be hurt again. I think there's a lot of that going on, for sure.
And you mentioned the scandals, and you say that they're good for the sport. Operation Puerto, for example, where we had Dr. Fuentes, a Spanish doctor, who was found to have blood-doped numerous athletes, but not just cyclists. He, by his own admission, claims that he treated footballers, tennis players, and yet we don't have the same follow-up in other sports. So is there a danger that all of these scandals, while it's good for purifying cycling, have acted as a bit of a warning to other sports as to here is how far a sport will have to go before it can clean itself up, before it can become credible again, and so they don't even scratch the surface of it? Because I struggle to think that other sports that haven't had doping scandals, that means that those sports are entirely clean.
Well, of course they aren't. But I don't think, unfortunately, I don't think that they see cycling as a warning sign. I think what other sports do, certainly on a commercial level, I've experienced this firsthand, is what other sports do is they throw cycling under the bus. Oh. You know, they say, oh, you know, you don't want to be involved in that sport. Like, it's dirty, blah, 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 blah. And all the while you're thinking, hold on a second. You know, your sport is far dirtier. It's just that there is no testing, or there's no effective testing. You know, I wish with Fuentes, as an example, that all the sports had been revealed, because fundamentally that would have been more fair than what happened. But that being said, it's a little bit, you know, worry about your own house and your own yard, and don't get too concerned about what's going on elsewhere. I think in cycling, we just need to kind of keep doing what we're doing and keep on it for what our fans want, not what football fans want or whatever, what our fans desire. Stay focused on that. And then if other sports want to see something good in what we're doing, great. If they don't, well, that's their problem. Maybe on a commercial level, other sports are going to be more successful because they don't have those scandals, which, of course, the businessman in me says, oh, okay, well, great. Then I'd rather be involved in that other sport or whatever. But fundamentally, where that falls down for me in my heart is that those sports, by taking that more commercial aspect, that taking the more, you know, sweep it under the rug way of going about things, are, you know, they're going to kill off athletes that have a strong moral compass. That those very talented athletes that have a strong moral compass are never going to see the top level of those sports, and they're going to walk away disappointed, disillusioned, and bitter. And every single time we prevent that in cycling, no matter how many millions of euros or pounds or whatever are lost commercially because of the scandals, every time we prevent a very talented, incredible athlete from walking away from the sport because he sees no chance in being competitive clean, then in my view, we've succeeded despite the financial loss.
If we look back to the 90s and the Armstrong era, we now have a period of cycling whereby the history books denote no winner of the Tour de France for 7 years. Mm-hmm. What do you make of the argument that, you know what, he just did what everybody else was doing, but better, and so he should be able to at least keep those titles, and the fact that he seems to have been punished an awful lot more harshly than anyone else who was involved in doping at the time because he was better at it, more organised at it than his rivals?
Yeah, I mean, so there's a few things there. I mean, with Lance, I'd say first of all, in those Tour de France, we don't know who the winner would be. You could say, well, he was doping and Jan Ulrich was doping and this guy was doping, whatever. And, you know, who is, going back to my analogy about the high hematocrit and the low hematocrit earlier on, we don't actually know who was getting the greatest benefit out of the doping products. So was Lance the best? No idea. Maybe. He might have been. You know, was Jan Ulrich better? Well, he might have been, or he might not have been. Was, I mean, I know in the 2001 Tour de France, I roomed with Bobby Julich for most of the Tour de France, and Bobby rode that 2001 Tour de France completely clean. Now, he admitted to doping in 1998, but in 2001, he rode it completely clean, and he finished 18th place overall. Maybe he was the best rider in the race.
How can you be sure he rode it completely clean?
Well, okay, again, I can't be 100%, but I basically lived with the guy for 3 weeks, which you know, I mean, Bobby and I don't always get along, so that was actually really hard. But just kidding, Bobby. but I, you know, people always say, I wouldn't put my hand in fire, da da da. I actually would put my hand in the fire for that. I mean, I can't say 100%, but if you ask me to put my hand in the fire and say, put your hand in the fire because you swear that he was clean, I would do it. I would actually put my hand in the fire. So, you know, I don't know, 18th place in 2001 Tour de France, completely clean. I mean, maybe he was the best guy. It's hard to say. But what differentiated, people get away with this. They say, okay, well then, but Lance is being punished disproportionately. No, he's not. He's not being punished disproportionately. Lance was somebody who, through his authority and his power and, you know, the sort of little miniature empire that he had built, was manipulating everything around him. And that might have been actually the greater offense than the doping. Like, he was essentially putting himself above the rules in a lot of ways. And he was, you know, not sort of winning a proportional amount or whatever more than his rivals. He was exponentially, you know, receiving benefit in exponential amounts more than anyone else in the sport, and was in essence, in a lot of ways, controlling the sport. And so from that regard, I think his punishment is actually quite proportional to what he did relative to, you know, Jan Ulrich, who doped in the same way but never, you know, was litigious with people, never tried to destroy people's lives, never tried to destroy people's careers, never tried to ruin other teams, never, you know, I mean, the salacious activities that Lance did apart from doping were the things that basically caused a very large portion of the sport to want to see him never return. And with Jan Ulrich, I think in a lot of ways he would be, you know, welcome to return in a lot of, because, and so, The precise crime of doping, yes, correct, it's the same. But on the periphery, I mean, Lance did so much more than any other cyclist. And I've said this before, I view that as what he did as sort of very sociopathic behavior. Whereas I view what his rivals did a lot of times as basically they were just trying to keep up with him.
So we're really going into the territory of moral judgment, aren't we, then?
Yes.
Because it's not just what he did to his body. Mm. It's how he behaved. It's how he acted. Mm. It's the ruthlessness that he exercised. And that is slightly different, isn't it, then? I mean, it's not the kind of thing that you can really legislate against.
No, of course, it's very different. And his argument, and I've seen it before, is that you know, there's no rule in the WADA rule book of, against being an asshole. But you know what? Maybe there's not in the WADA rule book, but there is in the rule book of life. There is something that says don't be an asshole. And I basically, I think WADA and USADA, you know, use their best judgment in looking at what and who is actually a problem in this sport versus what is a systemic issue that we need to solve, what needs to be eliminated and what needs to be corrected. And I think they very correctly determined he needed to be eliminated and that there were other things that needed to be corrected. And so, is that subjective judgment? Absolutely, it's subjective judgment. But to me, it's the correct subjective judgment.
And I guess it goes back to, again, what sport means. And, you know, talk about this line of whether something is right or wrong, but morals do come into it, and our own subjectivity comes into it. And I look at Team Sky, for example, and the hostility with which they are regarded by and large. And that's partly an attitude thing, isn't it? It's because people deem them to be arrogant, and because they deem their racing style to not be compatible with the passion and the romance and the spontaneity that they want out of cycling. And so they're almost, people are looking for extra scandal there because they just don't like them.
Yeah, well, that's absolutely true. I mean, the second part of what you said about their racing tactics and that they race in a way that, you know, people don't like, about that, I kind of, well, you know.
kind of agree with.
Tough luck. No.
Right.
Actually, I don't agree with that. Tactically, they race very effectively, and they should be allowed to race very effectively. I have no problem with that whatsoever. Where I feel like they get themselves in trouble is just the sort of, we don't need to deal with you because we're above this silly little sport attitude. That, you know, with the media and the fans and other teams, you know, having dealt with Dave on a number of issues, I can't say any of them were like particularly pleasant. And it was very much a, you know, I will squash you because I am above the sport kind of attitude. And that, when something like, you know, the Jiffy bag thing happens or the Froome thing happens, it's just like people are waiting for something like that to happen. And by the way, yes, Lance did the same thing. You know, Lance was, you know, such a jerk to everyone that when eventually, and, you know, forgot that there were 40 people that knew that he doped and didn't really have any regard for any of them. And when eventually they were asked the question, he doped, I remember Jeff Nowitzki, who was the head of the investigation of that, he said, I've never had so many people in an investigation volunteer to testify. He's like, this is amazing. I don't have to send out subpoenas. There are people raising their arms. And I think it's the same way with Team Sky. You know, there are people that are just volunteering to throw them under the bus because of the way they've sort of treated the sport and the way they've treated the fans and the way they've treated the other teams. And I mean, I guess, and it's one of those things, is there a rule against that? No. And do I think, and to be very clear, do I think that Sky is having this advanced super anti-doping program like U.S. Postal Service was? No, I don't. I don't actually think they're guilty of, you know, in its truest form, doping. I think, you know, I mean, I don't particularly love the whole triamcinolone thing with Wiggins. I mean, I won't get into that, but that one, I think they stepped across the line. But generally speaking, do I see the similarities between U.S. Postal Service and Sky from a pure doping standpoint? No, absolutely not. I don't. Do I see the similarities between them and their attitude toward the sport and toward the public and toward the media? Yeah, I do. And I would just say, you know, if that maybe they should consider, considering taking a little bit of a different tack than they have been as far as their communications and as far as their, you know, level of transparency and openness toward cycling and toward the fans and toward the media and towards other teams like ourselves.
So if what they're guilty of then is, in your mind at least, arrogance, again, does that depend on the sport? Because we look at the ruthlessness of winning football teams, for example, and if they can talk about crushing the opposition, then it's celebrated. Or we look at the open arrogance of Cristiano Ronaldo, for example. And again, that is celebrated. It's something that he is, okay, despised for, but also absolutely loved for. So does it depend on the sport what makes you celebrated or what makes you derided?
I think it does. I think, again, going back to my first statement, yes. I mean, I think our audience is different than the audience in football. And I think that it's not to say, listen, if Sky just crushes everyone in the competition, well, good for them. But cycling expects humble winners. And I think people who want to feel, you know, an emotional connection to the riders, an emotional connection to the race, an emotional connection to the suffering that the riders go through, they want a humble winner, and they want a proud underdog, and they want, you know, And so we should give them that, because and Sky's kind of come in with this, you know, we're going to be like a Formula One team or a football team and attitude, and I think it just doesn't serve their own interests. You know, a lot of my criticism over the past couple of days of them is not actually a sort of they're cheating bastards, blah 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 blah. That's not my opinion. My opinion is, hey guys, why don't you join the rest of us in the sport of professional cycling and actually love the sport a little bit first and actually speak to who our audience actually is first, and then if you win the race, great, then we'll all celebrate you.
So is there such a thing then, can there be such a thing as a universal sports fan, a fan of sport in general, or are they all too varied? Do they all mean too many different things to too many different people, and different moral codes and doping codes amongst all of them that you have to pick and choose?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm not a fan of all sports. I mean, I'll be honest, European football or whatever, soccer, I don't know what we call it. I can't watch it for 5 minutes. I mean, to me, it's just utterly boring. It's a bunch of people like chasing a ball around a field for forever, and no one scores. And yet,
people who are not into cycling will consider that barmy, because you totally. Boys ride your bikes for hours at a time
and nothing happens. Nothing happens. Exactly. Whereas I like American football, even though I think it's completely ludicrous and that the guys are clearly, you know, doping out of their gourds. I like watching it. So I don't think there is necessarily a universal sports fan, and I think there will be different standards held to different sports, and you know, we can be upset about that, or we can just kind of deal with it and move on.
So we should just accept it then, because cycling fans, I guess, in particular, become particularly exercised whenever they see a lack of criticism of other sports, for example, compared to the scrutiny given to cycling. Do you think that's just something that we accept? If you're going to be a fan of that sport, you accept that moral judgment that comes with it.
I think it's probably a safer way to go about it. I mean, listen, there's no one that gets more upset than me when I see that other sports are freely able to talk about injections and freely able to say, well, you know, he wouldn't have been able to play until we gave him a giant injection of cortisone into his brain, and then he was able to go back out in the field and he didn't feel a thing, you know. And I'm thinking, what the...
But you still wouldn't want that for your sport?
No, I still wouldn't want that for... No, I wouldn't. I mean, it... No. It's much more fun the way, because cycling is one of those like forward facing. It's not much fun nowadays because we're constantly having to deal with the scrutiny and criticism and nastiness. But actually, behind closed doors, it is quite a bit of fun because, you know, when I was racing, we sat around the dinner table and we talked about who was doping and how much they were using and if there was some new drug. And it was like the only topic at dinner table. And now the guys. I mean, you've got Taylor Finney talking about yoga, and you've got Rigo talking about bananas, and you've got, you know, and it's actually amazingly sort of relaxed behind the scenes, because there isn't this sort of we're doing something that no one should know about, or we're doing it that just doesn't exist, And I don't want it to exist again. I don't want the scrutiny to be less on cycling, so that we can freely go about injections, and because there's just, I mean, it's just a bit like icky. So I didn't particularly like it when I was riding. Why would I want that to change back to that just for the sake of, well, other sports do it, so we can do it too? I mean, that's silly. I'd like the purity of the way it is behind the scenes right now. I enjoy it.
Given your experience in the sport and everything you've seen and everything you've lived through, I say this sport, but just sport in general, do you ever indulge in innocence? Do you ever watch a 100-meter final or a marathon or a football match? I guess football is a bad analogy, but any sport, and allow yourself to just believe that it's clean? Or is there always a nagging doubt, and is that healthy?
No, I allow myself to believe all the time. And there's a very specific reason that I do that. And I think sometimes I get a little bit of criticism for sort of having an overly Pollyanna view in, you know, in the media and social media and so on and so forth. But if you don't believe that the winner is clean, and you're a competitive person, you're competing. Now, I'm not directly competing in the race, but I'm, you know, organizing an entity that does. If you believe that your competition is cheating before the race starts, your motivation goes to nothing. So when I watch any sport, my assumption is it's always fair. And is that a little bit me, you know, just viewing the world through rose-colored glasses? Yeah, it is. And I need to do that. And I need to convey to my athletes that that's the way I believe. Because if I don't, if they don't believe that it's a fair race on the start line of the Tour de France this year, they'll give up before the race ever starts. So if we're sitting around talking about how all the other teams are cheating and we aren't cheating, we've already lost. Like, why are we even in the race? We should just go home right now and forget about it. So yeah, I do believe when I watch other sports, and I do believe when I watch bike races, and I will continue to do so.
So sitting here then on the eve of the Tour de France, you believe that whoever will stand on the top of the podium in Paris in 3 weeks' time, you're happy to believe, at least in your heart, that they're clean?
Yeah, absolutely. And part of that is, as I just described, that I have to believe that. But there's also, you know, I have a rather analytical, scientific mind, and I served on the board of the CADF for quite a number of years, and I know Francesco Rossi. I know Ann Gripper on a very personal level, you know, the two last chiefs of anti-doping and cycling. And I know many, many, many people that work at WADA and are good friends with them. And my belief is from the data that I have seen and the sport as a whole, meaning blood values as a mean, not individual with names attached, but as a broad scope, that, you know, the sport is in a much, much better place than it was 10 years ago. And yes, definitively, empirically and emotionally, I do believe that the winner of the Tour de France this year will be a clean rider.
We all need something to believe in, Jonathan. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Well, it is nice to end on an optimistic note, however Pollyanna-like that might be. As a sports journalist, it can be easy to become quite cynical and forget why sport matters on a more fundamental level. I at least think we need to be reminded of that sometimes. Well, if you have any thoughts on this discussion, I'd love to hear them on Twitter at When Orla Met, or you could send me an email, orla@whenorlamet.com. Feel free to check out my back catalogue from a range of sports on your usual podcast platforms. And if iTunes is your thing, I'd love it if you left me a review. A huge thank you to Jonathan Rowe, who's edited each one of these episodes for me, including, of course, this one. And if you don't want to miss out on any of the chats still to come, please do subscribe to When Orla Met.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.